Are you struggling to sleep these days? So are millions of other Americans. Experts estimate that more than 70 million people in the U.S. don't get adequate sleep. And about 30% of individuals say that they suffer from common insomnia symptoms like not feeling well rested and struggling to fall asleep or stay asleep through the night. Many adults know this feeling all too well, those frustrating hours spent tossing and turning, hoping you can get some shut-eye in order to not feel like a zombie come morning. In desperation, some people turn to sleep aid medications, relying on them for years. However, Eric Prather says that before turning to drugs, there are other small, incremental life changes that can make a big difference. Prather is a psychologist at the University of California, San Francisco. He's also the author of The Sleep Prescription, 7 Days to Unlocking Your Best Rest. He says that before filling out sleep aid prescription, try switching up how you view sleep.
Some of this has been related to kind of pharmaceutical sleep aids and concerns about chronic use and what it might mean for brain health kind of in the future. And so it has become increasingly more challenging for patients to get those prescriptions, though certainly many still do. And, you know, a lot of people use sleep aids, whether it's over the counter or by prescription. And in acute settings, those aren't bad ideas, right? I mean, they're developed for a reason. They do tend to help people fall asleep, and many of them don't have severe side effect profiles. However, the challenge is that while they might not be physiologically addicting, they almost immediately become psychologically addicting.
Instead of prescribing medicines, Prather has helped hundreds of patients improve their sleep through the use of cognitive behavioral therapy.
You know, usually it's people that, you know, are experiencing kind of stress in their life or something happened, but it happened a while ago. And so over time, you know, the stressor may have gone away, but now their sleep is completely off track. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that when people experience things in their lives that are stressful, their sleep is disrupted, which is natural. And we're kind of built for that. We need to kind of act oftentimes when those things are happening and we can put off sleep. But people will get distressed about the fact that they have lost this sleep, and they'll try to make changes in their life to get their sleep back on track because sleep has become really unpredictable. They find themselves chasing it. I always say that sleep is something that we never even wonder how it works until it stops working, then become really focused on making it happen. But oftentimes we're kind of getting in our own way to allow something that, you know, happens naturally, that kind of washes over us. And so in our clinic, we spend a lot of time trying to reschedule people's sleep and taking out these barriers, taking out the guesswork and the effort, because that's usually what is ensuring that people have these kind of prolonged awakenings and disrupted nights.
For people with insomnia, Prather focuses in on adjusting some key basics. Often one big culprit is caffeine.
Caffeine actually stays in our system for quite a long time. The half-life of caffeine is about 6 hours. And so that means that if you have a double espresso at 4 p.m., at 10 p.m., you still have a single espresso in your system, right? And so no surprise that it can impact your sleep. Caffeine as a chemical actually competes with what we think is kind of the neurochemical that builds up in our brain that brings on sleepiness. So it competes with that on the receptors in our brain and kind of allows us to maintain alertness despite the fact that we continue to be up, and that sleepiness neurochemical, which is known as adenosine, just keeps building up. And so it helps us stay alert, but we certainly suggest that, you know, maybe curbing caffeine use, not after lunch. And if you, you know, are having some sleep problems, maybe cutting it out altogether is kind of an easy strategy to see if you can get your sleep back on track.
This same tactic also applies to when you're eating. That indulgent late-night snack right before bed could be sending mixed signals to your brain that it's not quite time to snooze yet.
Another one that is really important is things like meal timing. Our body needs to know when to be ready for making insulin and storing glucose and all of those sorts of things. And kind of, you know, the timing of those meals help regulate our clock, which is why, you know, if you experience jet lag, and you're in a new place, say you go 3 hours east, oftentimes you'd want to get kind of on the eating schedule of that place that you're in, because it'll help tell your body what is happening next. It'll help it adjust more rapidly.
Another part of good sleep hygiene is having a set bedtime and wake time. As frustrating as it might be to abide by, it's important to set firm limits on when it's time to get out of bed and get moving.
We want people kind of to wake up the same time 7 days a week because that helps entrain our circadian rhythm that we talked about, as well as kind of setting in line your sleep drive to kind of build up across the day. And then we want to make sure that people aren't spending excess time in bed not sleeping. One of the things that happens is that, you know, people begin to kind of lose this relationship with the bed such that they experience what's called a conditioned arousal. Like they get in bed, they might be sleepy, they get in bed and then their brain wakes up. And that's a really common experience that we hear from people with insomnia. So we really have to retrain the brain so that the bed is something that brings on sleepiness. And what that requires is kind of removing yourself from the situation, waiting till you're sleepy again, do some relaxation exercises, what have you, and then get back in bed to kind of build up that conditioned response. Because the bed turns out to be like a really important trigger for bringing on sleepiness for people who don't have sleep problems. And we need to get back to that.
However, Prather knows that this isn't a possibility for everyone.
That's the general principle, that it's kind of a place for sleep and sex is what we say. But, you know, I mean, we also have to kind of understand that not everybody has that luxury. So, you know, I work in San Francisco and a lot of people live in studio apartments where their bed is their couch, is their table, is their office desk. And we have to kind of figure out how to meet people in the middle to try and do whatever adaptations we can to amp up that sleep experience. But I think in general, if it's possible, yeah, you want to protect that environment and kind of invest in that night of sleep because it's certainly going to have a big return on investment the following day.
If you live in a tight space, try to get out first thing in the morning. Go for a walk or grab a drink at a coffee shop. The main goal is to get out of bed and train your body to know that it's time to wake up and get going. But this can also be harder lately as much of the country shifts into the colder winter months where there's not as much morning sunlight.
Also, what commonly happens around the change in the seasons is kind of an uptick in things like seasonal affective disorder and depression. And, you know, sleep disturbances are fairly common in that context. And one thing that people do when they are low in mood is they might spend extra time in bed, not sleeping. And when that happens, it can lead to kind of lighter, more fragmented sleep overall. And people become distressed about the fact that they're not getting the sleep they need. And that can, in theory, generate what would be considered an insomnia that needs treatment.
For people who do seek professional help, Prather says that many patients come in holding an all-or-nothing mentality on sleep. It's either working or it's completely broken. Instead, he believes people shouldn't have such a stark outlook. There are many small factors that feed into the issue, and this type of black-and-white thinking doesn't help.
You know, I always try to remind people that we're kind of built for resilience. I mean, talk to any parent of a young child, you know, they're missing sleep all the time, but your body will compensate. You know, like a bad night of sleep often just means that your next night is going to be better, that it's going to be kind of more restorative. You're going to sleep deeper because your body's going to try to make that up, right? And that's just how the system is set up.
To find out more about this topic and our guest, Eric Prather, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also check out his new book, The Sleep Prescription, 7 Days to Unlocking Your Best Rest, now available online and in select bookstores. For more behind the scenes, search Viewpoints Radio on Twitter and Facebook. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zavery. I'm Gary Price. Coming up on Viewpoints.
I think in general, parties feel, okay, if you've lost, you need to move on and we need to bring fresh blood in to run against that challenger on the other party.
The 2024 presidential election is just around the corner. Then,
there's fewer youth who actually engage with someone who's served in the military, and so they might not see it as an avenue of service.
Understanding why our military is shrinking. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.